Are still vulnerable. I think that one of the biggest things we need to fight for is that insurance should not be tied to your job. That's one of the things that I think would make labor, have more power if we are able to hold a job without being held there because we are so afraid to go anywhere else and risk losing our health insurance. So we are, that's one of some of the things to think about as we enjoy Labor Day. I know that, Labor Day is also the end of summer, and it's hard to imagine with a beautiful sunny day like this that we're heading into the fall, which is great. I love wearing sweaters and boots and my jackets and things like that. But I was just reading an article about how this was the 8th hottest and most humid summer. I'm already thinking about snow. It was the 8th hottest and most humid summer on record. We had over 13 tornado warnings. What you've accomplished? Did the hot weather hold you back at all this summer? Because for me, on top of the pandemic, I found it so hard to get things done, to work out, to do things around my yard. And some of the time, I just wanted to sit on my couch and enjoy the air conditioning. And working from home definitely made that possible. So give us a call 773-763-WCPT to join our conversation. That's 773-763-9278. What are you thinking about on this Labor Day? I know we just came out of a show with Joan Esposito and Paul Vallis, and that always generates texts and phone calls. One of the things that jumped out at me, I don't know about you guys, but sometimes when Paul's on, there's a lot of screaming in my house, and sometimes I look around, I'm like, oh, that was me. I've met Paul. He's a great guy, but that idea, if you caught this during their conversation, he was talking about this slippery slope of the January 6th investigations, and Joan and he were going back and forth about whether it was Hillary and the investigation in Benghazi, and whether or not the State Department had not fully had that building secure, that funding was drawn down, and made that building vulnerable. And he was talking about how, if we do it, then they do it, and then they do it, and then we do it. But isn't it the same thing of behaving badly? If we let somebody go with that behavior, with being really, I'm sorry, but January 6th was treasonous. It was a terrorist attack. And if we don't do anything, if we don't hold people accountable, my sense is that was just a practice run. Why would we not go after people who are behaving in a treasonous way? I hate coming on right after Paul's been on Joan's show, and we don't have the chance to talk to him about it, but we can talk to each other about some of the issues and topics that came up during the conversation. And again, it is Labor Day, and there's a story that I have been following fairly closely over the last few months, and I do think this ties into labor. I don't think it does. It absolutely 100% ties into labor. If you're following the story of the Chicago Park District, two young women came forward less than 2 years ago, and they gave reports of really horrible sexual assault, sexual harassment and abuse. And they work for the lifeguard service. Some of the guards who have come forward, some of the women who have come forward work at the beaches. Some of them work at pools. There are stories of women being assaulted on their work site. There are women who talk about being at parties that someone was on them and they had to get them off. I've talked to people who have been at the Park District questioning some of the things that are going on, in particular an instance at North Avenue Beach. There were two guards who were wearing two-piece bikinis, like a string bikini top and a thong bottom that said lifeguard with the Chicago Stars on it. And this was at North Avenue Beach. And if you're not familiar with the way the lifeguard service works at North Avenue Beach and spots like that and Oak Street Beach, the guards start out at a central location and they are sent to an assignment from where to guard, whether it's a boat or a perch or a jetty. And if it sounds like I know what I'm talking about, it's because I spent two summers working as a lifeguard at North Avenue Beach in 1989 and 1990. And this photo is of these women running to their positions after being assigned by their mates or captains. Those are their supervisors on the lakefront, usually not more than teenagers themselves, maybe in their 20s. But these girls are wearing these really revealing bikinis. And And when they were asked about it, when the guards were asked about it, they were like, whoa, don't you like that? Like, of course we have our lifeguards wearing thong underwear. Those are not Chicago Park District issued uniforms. I don't know why they're having girls in these clothes and why we continue to have a culture of sexual harassment, of abuse and assault, that it continues to be swept under the rug. And this has been going on for decades. People don't talk about it because they don't want to be the snitch. They don't want to be the one that ruins it for everybody else. And the same people have been in charge of this lifeguard service for decades. And it has only gotten worse. When I was a guard, there was an award known as a Tower Betty. And that was the award they would give at the end of the year for who they thought was the hottest chick. That was in 1989. Now the awards at beaches like North Avenue is now whore of the beach. This is what we are submitting our teenagers, our young women to. And yes, and men, because we are teaching them that that's okay. It's okay to teach women like this in the workplace. And there is no one standing up for these young women. And it is infuriating to me that there is no union for the Chicago Park District lifeguards. There is no one there's no accountability when it comes to how these young people. And again, these are teenagers, some of them starting as young as 15 years old. There's a culture of drinking and partying. And yeah, let's talk about your body in front of everybody and submit you to the sexual harassment. It is absolutely unconscionable what's happening at the Chicago Park District. I don't know if that's something you want to talk about, but that's something that's been on my mind today as we think about labor. Because as a lifeguard, I'll tell you, you have to be highly trained in order to be a guard. You train for months in order to even have the opportunity to serve as a lifeguard with the Park District. On the line right now to join our conversation, and maybe it's about a different topic. Hey, Jim, how are you doing?
Hi, Terry. How are you? I think the proliferation of pornography has destroyed half of the youth. I mean, they see explicit things on their phones at 12 years old. I mean, I've heard conversations. They're just horrendous. Anyway, but off that subject, what are we going to do about it? There's nothing worse. Larry Holker is governor of California. Can you picture that?
I'm sorry, who's governor of California?
Larry Elder. Larry Elder is governor of California.
Did this? I haven't seen the count that this has got. This is official?
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, God. Don't scare me like that. You're talking about the recount, recall vote.
I'm terrified myself. It's the 18th. I think the election is the 18th of September.
Oh, my.
But according to Hartman this morning, Hartman said he thinks Elder's a shoo-in.
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine putting up with him for 4 years? And then Feinstein is 88. They'll probably put Trump's son in there as senator. I mean, it's a nightmare. It's an absolute
nightmare. Have you seen this? I'm looking up some of the latest news on Larry Elder because I'm like, wait, what is Jim talking about? No, by the way, did you hear about this speech or this comment he made on Candace Owens' show? And right there, you already know this isn't going to go well. But he says that slave owners are owed reparations. Holy cats.
Well, he sells it the right wing stuff for your pain. I mean, he's absolutely nuts. The guy's nuts, but who knows? The way things are going, anything's possible, Teddy.
I agree. That's how I feel. Anything is possible. You too, my friend. What are you doing for Labor Day? You having a little barbecue?
I'm still praying to death. I go out a few times, but with this variant, as soon as you turn the news on, you find out 1,100 people are dead again today.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a lot of Americans who lose it every day.
Isn't it amazing? How much pro-lifers are excited about Texas and yet don't care that 1,100 people have died?
Your faith in mankind has just been shaken. I mean, they won't wear a mask. They won't get vaccinated. They pretend like this is some kind of a political football, this disease. It's absolutely, I've never seen anything like this. I didn't believe I'd live this long to see something that's crazy. It'd be like seeing polio when I was a kid. A Republican said polio. It's just... Yeah. I can't believe it.
Well, Jim, that's why you're here. We're here to help each other restore, renew our faith in each other. How's that sound? Right? We're here.
Great to me, Jim. Sounds great to me, but we better get on the ball because this thing by the winter, God only knows where this is headed. This is another nightmare in front of us, it seems like. it just seems like we're going to lose 1,100 people and maybe more as we go on every day. That's a lot of human beings. It's a lot of human beings.
It's true.
Anyway, Derek, thank you very kindly.
Of course.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
You as well, Jim. Thank you so much. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to check in with Mark, who's giving us a call from the 314. It's the St. Louis area. So let's see what Mark has to say. What do you have to say? What's on your mind? 773-763-WCPT. That's 773-763-9278. You can call or text us to that number. But as Santita Jackson says in our mornings, I'd love to hear your beautiful voice.
The Hal Sparks Radio Program.
There are millions of people in the United States who are avoiding getting vaccinated. Not because they were anti-vax 6 years ago or 2 years ago or even genuinely that way now, but because it is literally just an act of stubborn fealty to Donald John Trump.
Hal Sparks, Saturdays from 11 to 1 on WCPT 820, Chicago's Progressive Talk.
Patty Vasquez is taking your calls now at 773-763-9278. Driving it home with Patty Vasquez now on WCPT 820.
You can also join the conversation by liking our Facebook page. You can get WCPT on Facebook and like the page. And also, you can watch the live stream right there and join the conversation. I'll try to keep up with all of your questions and comments. Joining us right now on the line is our listener and friend, Mark from St. Louis. Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
How you doing, Patty? How you doing this Labor Day?
I'm doing well. How's the weather by you?
It's pretty good. It's not too bad. Not too hot. Just right.
That's what I'm looking for. Yep. It's a good hammock day.
I was just going to make a comment about what Jim was talking about, Larry Elder. Don't worry about it. From the latest polls I saw, it's like 58% of the residents out there don't want to Newsom recall. So he pretty much got it. You know, you just got to just get the people motivated out there, especially the young people out there, to get motivated to vote. And they say he's leading by the mail-in ballot, so almost 2-1. So,
I think it's one thing for people to not want him. It's another thing they've got to either show up or get those ballots in. That's the thing that makes me nervous a lot of times. You can have this energy of what people want, but it's in that execution of making sure we all get across the finish line that's important, right?
Yes. From the latest polls I saw, it was like 58% of the residents out there don't want Newsom recall. So, you know, if he could get those kind of numbers, I think it's pretty much, you know, just people just showing up on the day to vote. That's basically it. Because, you know, the minority is just a minority out there that's vocally loud. It's a loud majority, minority out there. That's basically all it is. It's like a million people. And then I think California got how many people that stay out there? 40 million or something like that.
Right.
So, most of the people support Newsom out there. So I wouldn't be too concerned about that.
I have a question for you, and this is for everybody. Uh-huh. It just happens that you called in about the Newsom recall. What do you think about, like, if we had someone that was terrible and we had the opportunity to do what they are doing in California? Like, there was no energy for it under Rauner, but let's say we had someone like Trump or someone who was a white supremacist or somebody who, you know, as the days went by, you realize, well, this is awful, and we try to put energy behind a recall vote. Is that something, or would you prefer that we wait until, because this is like $400 million that goes into this one in California. Do you think it's better to wait until their term is up, or do you believe in the recall of a governor like this?
I think to wait till the time is up. That's what our democracy is built on. If you don't like somebody, vote them out. That's how you do that. Don't get these recalls, all these special elections for recalls and all that crap. But I had a question for you also.
Yes.
Now, we're doing this pandemic now. Now, say if this virus that hit us like 10, 15 years ago, do you think this virus will be over behind us right now?
You mean if this
virus was to happen, if we had this virus 10 to 15 years ago,
So either George Bush or Obama is in office. And we don't have the social media nightmare going on. Look, there are good things about it. There are bad things about it. But you don't have as much misinformation available constantly in this vacuum of ignorance, right? So
yes,
I don't think it's as bad as it is now. I don't think so, because
I think this would be gone, Patty, because it's just to show you how divided. If I say the sky is blue, somebody will come along and say, oh, no, you're wrong. It's red.
Right.
We can't agree on anything in this country anymore. You know, the truth is just basically gone out the window now. So then you got all, like you said, you got the social media and Facebook just let all this misinformation just continue to spread. I mean, it's incredible. You know, and you got people just don't believe anything you say. They don't trust the government. You know, anything the government says is a big lie. You know, so that's why this country is so divided. I just don't think we are ever come together on anything anymore.
There, I think, and that's what Jim was talking about, how his confidence in humanity is shaken. And I think a lot of us feel that way. And you know, one of the things that I've thought about is we really do have a lot of states that while they go blue, it's in large part because they have big cities that are blue, right? Like Illinois. Yeah. Illinois is a blue state in a sea of red. And we were very vulnerable under Governor Rauner and that momentum behind, you know, get somebody else in there besides a Democrat. And, you know, Democrats have held the line. It was shaky there during the budget impasse. But in a lot of states where you have, you know, big blue urban cities, they are surrounded by a sea of red. And I just don't know how this is not sustainable. This energy is not. Yeah.
And Patty, that's just why I don't understand. It's like the Republicans are playing for the long game. It's like the Democrats are so short-sighted.
Yes.
Man, they get that. It's like here, the legislature is basically Republican. That's how it is here. We're surrounded by a sea of red. We got two blue counties. We got Kansas City and St. Louis. But the rest of everything that's around is totally red. I said, I just don't understand this.
Yep.
You know, the Republicans play for the long game, and we are so short-sighted, man. We don't be aggressive enough. We always reactionary. And look what they did in Texas with these vote laws. They the Democrats ran out of town. But for what? They still passed the law.
Right.
What did they accomplish? Nothing.
And this has been a long time. Again, you know, a good point about Texas. Not just the voting rights, but also the abortion ban and putting a bounty on your neighbor's heads because if you want to retaliate against them or snitch on them or whatever. This goes back, you know, I talked the other day about not maintaining a separation between church and state. Also, conservatives were masterful in the 60s. Roger Ailes and the concept of Fox News. And if you drive through anywhere in the country, there's every station is either a Christian radio station or conservative talk show radio station.
Exactly.
And you've got the Rush Limbaugh network still playing for people on repeat. They constantly listen to that. It's because it's also for people who grew up in those communities. It's also comfortable. It's familiar. And progressives, you know, we don't want to force our ideas on people. Even, no matter what they say, we aren't as aggressive. We have not consolidated. I remember when Governor Pritzker was in my studio at another station. I was filling in during the day. And he goes, hey, how do we get... He wasn't the governor yet. He was just running. He goes, how do we make sure you're on during the day? I go, buy a radio station, sir.
Right.
Progressives don't invest in media the way that conservatives do.
No, they sure don't. And that's why we lag him behind. Like I said, we always reactionary. We never go on the offense. We have to go on the offense because, like I said, Republicans play for the long game. They get these legislators, and you can hire scoopers and protest all you want to. But when it's all said and done, what happens? They get their results. They get their laws passed. They just run over us. So we have to change if you want to become viable in this country.
They're very efficient, right? And they do right now have their litmus test amongst themselves. If you're not pro-Trump, if you don't spread the lies of it was a fraudulent election or the lie of vaccines don't work and that COVID isn't real, then they don't want you. They won't support you. You're not on the team. With Democrats,
right.
I mean, we will eat each other up and spit each other out and we weaken ourselves by behaving that way with our very low bar of what's acceptable.
Right. It'd be interesting to see what happens in these midterms. I'm just scared to death because I know us. The Democrats going to sit back and rest on their laurels, and then
yes.
Republicans going to get on and take over the Senate and the House. And then you think it's bad when Trump was in office. Let's look at all the kind of laws they're going to be putting on the table and passing. I mean, it's scary. I mean, I don't know where this country's going to be in the next 10, 15 years. It's scary.
I know. For the first time, I've been looking around. I'm like, where do I want to live when I retire? I'm going to Denmark? I don't know.
I know. Okay, Patty, always nice conversing with you. You have a nice rest of the Labor Day, okay?
You too. Thank you so much, Mark. All right. Take care. Look forward to talking to you again. We're going to take a break here, checking with traffic and a word from the station, and then we will talk to Deputy Mayor of Public Safety, John O'Malley. Will talk to us about the new program that they have in place when responding to possible situations of domestic violence, mental health issues. You know, we've been talking about this for months, and why can't Chicago do what they are doing in Denver and Las Vegas and Portland? Well, let's find out how this is rolling out in Chicago. More in a moment. Join our conversation anytime, 773-763-WCPT. That's 773-763-9278.
Joan Esposito, live, local, and progressive on WCPT Willow Springs, is powered by ComEd. Lower your energy bills and reduce your carbon footprint with the ComEd Energy Efficiency Program.
Patty Vasquez is taking your calls now at 773-763-9278. Driving it home with Patty Vasquez now on WCPT 820.
A few weeks ago, I introduced you to the new Deputy Mayor of Public Safety. That is John O'Malley, former U.S. Marshal, and all-around really great speaker and expert on law enforcement and what it takes to help keep people safe. And that, I'm guessing that's part of why you got the job, isn't it, Deputy Mayor? Hi, Deputy Mayor John.
Patty, how are you? Thanks for having me on.
Of course. I'm happy Labor Day, my friend.
Yes, happy Labor Day to you as well.
Is that why you forgot that you were in studio today? I'll go ahead and tease you.
I did.
Yeah. I'd like you to go ahead and scroll. I'd like you to go back and scroll through that conversation where I said, are you sure you want to come in on Labor Day?
I did. I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
I'm outside a hockey rink.
Oh, you are?
On the ice, yeah. So,
excellent.
Lovely Lincolnwood, Illinois.
Oh, excellent. I know that rink very well, as a matter of fact. Now, you know, for years, people have been talking about these programs in Denver, in Portland, in Las Vegas, where law enforcement is sent out on certain calls. The call is triaged at the 911 call center, and a determination is made whether or not to send out perhaps a different team in order to deal with a situation. Tell us what Chicago is now putting into place in a similar way.
Right. So we, for the first time ever here in Chicago, we have assembled a team piloting on the 19th district on the north side and in the 6th police district on the south side. And those two districts were chosen because of historic number of calls into the 911 center dealing with, mental illness calls, et cetera. So those are the highest districts of call volume. So obviously that's where we want to start this pilot program. So we have started last week. The training has been over. The teams have been out and about, going to roll calls, going to firehouses, going to medical centers, meeting people in the community, et cetera. So there's going to be a team of trained Chicago police officers, trained paramedics, trained clinicians who will be on a team out in the street. And then at the 911 center, we have trained clinicians that will be triaging those 911 calls to determine if this is a case where the team could be helpful. Normally what we've had in the past is just 911 is called and the police respond, try to figure out what they have once they arrive on the scene. So now you're going to have a team of specifically trained people to try and deal with the situation at hand and trying to get the people treatment in lieu of getting into the criminal justice system or tying up space and rooms at emergency departments.
And I know a lot of the energy behind this, the urgency to implement something like this, was tied in many ways to the death of George Floyd. Now, in a situation like that, I mean, it's going to take the 911 intake, right, the dispatcher, to make the determination. Is that accurate?
That's right, right. So they'll be on site at the 911 center helping the call takers and intervening there and just really triaging what's the situation at the scene. Is there a violent history of the offender? If the person who's calling knows, is there any weapon on site? Are there weapons involved? If so, then this team is probably will not be the team necessarily responding to those type of calls. This is, hey, my roommate is out of control. you know, not violent, not breaking things, not attacking people, and just trying to get those people help. And they're also going out. We have data, Patty, on people who have had these 911 calls before. So we're actually reaching out to those people directly to say, or family members of those people to say, listen, you don't need to call 911. You can call directly to the team. So each
really?
Of, and these are vans that are set up, right? So they're going to be doing all those follow-ups. So as soon as they start handling those calls, they'll be notifying the individual they're dealing with or family members to call them directly in the future. So that's kind of how and doing outreach in these areas where, you know, you have an alternative instead of just calling 911
right.
as we go. So we're going to collect about 6 to 9 months of data to see how the program could be done better, how the program can learn from you know, the best practices. As you mentioned, other cities are doing it out in Oregon, Austin, Texas, some other cities that we've been in constant contact with. You know, and we've had the benefit of listening to them and how they've learned from their mistakes to kind of alter our program.
Well, and I know the goal in a lot of those cities is to avoid sending everyone to jail when the call really, and I mean, Tom Dart, Sheriff Dart has talked about how he's one of the biggest mental health facilities in the country where a lot of these folks, whether it's addiction issues, mental health issues, rather than incarcerating somebody and exacerbating the problem, possibly making them, you know, expanding recidivism, you want to help give people the kind of help and support that they need. And I'm guessing that's
absolutely.
Yeah, that's the goal of this program.
Yeah, that is the goal. And also to you know, let the police respond to calls where true police services are needed.
Right.
You know, our police officers historically have not been trained to deal with, you know, calls such as this. And if they did, it was always, you know, in handcuffs they go and to the lockup. And that necessarily isn't the course of action where we want these people to go. And then the second level will be heading into 2022 is a very similar type program that's going to deal with drug addiction or chronic alcoholism. So, you know, someone is having a drug episode, doesn't necessarily mean that should be criminal in nature. A similar team will respond and take them for treatment and not necessarily just to an emergency department unless they're, you know, a real life risk there or, you know, getting law enforcement involved. So similar type program will be launched as we head into 2022.
And what is the response that you're getting? Because, and I know that you have to walk this balancing act, this, you know, this fine line of the responsibility you have, of course, to first responders and yourself coming from law enforcement, as well as, you know, the kind of policing the public wants, that people want in their communities. You know, there was a lot of pushback and mocking, actually, from police officers, you know, whether it's if there's a, you know, somebody who's dangerous, do you really want to call a social worker for a situation like this? It seemed to be very condescending in reaction to the proposal of a program like this in the city of Chicago. How are you rolling this out so that it is also embraced by our police officers?
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought that up because that's actually the opposite of what we've been seeing over the last 10 days going out to all the roll calls. In the 19th and 6th District, the police officers that we've spoken to are actually very excited about the program. When does it start? How do we get involved? Now, they can't just wash their hands of it as well. We have to take this. What I've encouraged the teams and everyone involved in this, we need to take this slow and steady because this is very, very serious business. And we don't want failure right out of the gate and having someone injured, either people were responding to or the responders as part of this care team. So they are very encouraged because I think they recognize they also need the help. They are not, you know, they haven't been trained well enough. I'm just talking about the average beat officer. They haven't been trained to deal with these situations. So any help they can get, and they know that they will be ready to respond as well if the team does show up and there's a situation where they need law enforcement to respond. So, you know, we're not going in this blindly and naively to think that the police don't have to be involved at all. So that's where that triage also comes into play when the initial call comes in, making sure this is not a violent episode, making sure the person doesn't have access to weapons, et cetera, before we send in a team that's not backed up necessarily with law enforcement.
Right, because that's the hard part, obviously, with any city, large city like Chicago, is that a call to 911 is, up until now, up until this new program has been implemented, has been basically one size fits all. You're going to get the exact same kind of trained police officers to every single situation. And that puts not just, you know, not just the police officers in danger, but anytime, you know, it does lower, I would think, you know, hopefully for the long term, the risk for everyone that's involved in a 911 call. Because, look, I was reading online, someone, you know, in a neighborhood group was complaining about music going late into the night, right? And we've had that happen on my block, and everyone's response is, we'll just call the cops. Well, I mean, I get it. We live in a fairly safe neighborhood. On the other hand, there's a lot going on where, you know, I just don't think a loud party is a need to call 911, is it? I mean, you guys don't want to be like the dad's gonna, don't make me come down there, I'll drive everybody home. I mean, that's basically what we treat 911 like, right?
We do. And again, so, you know, so many calls in these two districts pertaining to the data shows over the last 5 years of these calls. So if we can reduce that, and again, you know, as Tom Dart says, and I've heard him say that too, Cook County Jail is one of the largest mental institutions in the country. So how do we get these people, you know, steer them away from the criminal justice system? Unless there's a, you know, if they commit a criminal offense, by then all bets are off, right?
Right.
Then it might go that route. But we're just talking about a person who's having an episode. You know, the grandmother doesn't know how to deal with it, so her reaction is to call 911 when the police show up, and sometimes that aggravates the situation. So if we can get people there trained to talk to the person, to guide them, and then the follow-up is going to be the real piece. These teams will be equipped to do the follow-up. What happened to that call over on Damon Avenue? Let's follow up what happened 3 days later. Let's go visit that person. So, you know, again, piloting this program to make sure it's successful. We've learned a lot of mistakes that other cities have made so that we can have, you know, better practices going into this. And, you know, I think it's going to be, at the end of the day, a very successful program, and will free up, you know, resources. Again, don't forget about these emergency rooms that are tied up with people that necessarily don't need to be at an emergency room. So, you know, they're also the medical profession. A lot of the emergency rooms in these particular areas are very excited about it as well, because they often get saddled with this individual for hours and hours, taking up emergency department resources when that really doesn't need to be the case.
Absolutely. And another situation in which people call 911 is to report a homeless person, you know, whether it's under a viaduct or they don't feel comfortable. I mean, look, and sometimes you walk out your back door and someone's on your back porch, you know, and so the instinct is to call 911. What kind of relationships do these co-responders have with folks that work with the homeless or the unsheltered?
Yeah, that's another. So part of that community, uptown and other areas, specifically the 19th district on the south side, they're doing all that outreach, Patty. So because oftentimes that is the case, that someone's having an episode, someone will call 911, and it's a homeless person who just needs, again, not necessarily is committing a criminal act, but is acting strangely, is causing a disturbance. And, you know, 6 months ago, that person would have been locked up, brought to, you know, whatever district, put in the lockup, you know, maybe been released later. And that is not the setting that we want these folks in. So they're doing, and a lot of their work is doing all that research,
right?
Is making sure that they're making contact with the right people.
Are you getting a call? Are you getting a call from the city? Why are you on the radio with Patty Vasquez?
No, that was actually an alarm going off.
Okay. Was it to remind you to be at? Was it to remind you to be at the WCPT studios
to see Patty?
Yeah.
Making all those outreach. They're making all those. That's another part of the team. They're not just going to sit around twiddling their thumbs, hoping and waiting for a call. They're making those connections out in the community every day. So that's a lot of the work they've been doing. This will kick off We're going to start taking these calls real soon, within the next week or so.
Is there, when you say that people are out in the communities, and I'm right now, and for those who are listening and you're like, well, that sounds like a horrible idea, let me just talk this through, because by the time I'm done saying it, it might sound like a terrible idea. But for, let's just use my family as an example, and I think this is being done in some of the suburbs. Like folks who have someone in their family who is has challenges, my son Declan does not speak, nor does he follow instructions or orders. You know, I think that there are some communities that are putting in information so that, like, let's say I call and say Declan's got, you know, Declan has left our house. We don't know where he is. We can't find him. Is there a way to already have him in the system where, like, okay, Declan is 5'3". He's, you know, rather than in that moment of emergency, have that information available already in the system? Or is that a terrible idea, John?
No, that's a great idea. And absolutely. So this is not more work at this team will be doing, again, like we talked about. And that's often the case, Patty, is a family member that has the police have had dealings with before. And again, nothing criminal about it, that these services would benefit that person because they're just having an episode, or the example you just gave has left the house. You know, maybe this team could help the police department. They locate them, then show up on the scene and try to deal with the person.
Right.
You know, after I left law enforcement, I was in corporate security for an investment banking firm for numerous years. And one of the employees, you know, told me that her daughter has episodes and was at a university. And she was worried that if something were to happen, someone called 911 on her, the police would respond and it wouldn't end well. So I encouraged her to absolutely, next time she's at campus, call first, and once she's in campus, go and talk to command staff of the police department, explain the situation, so that they had her in their system, that if a 911 call was made to her dormitory, it's not necessary that to know that she has, you know, this she can overreact and act out, but it's not necessarily anything criminal. So,
or dangerous to them. Right.
To campus police. Yes. And they were actually so thankful that they identified her so that if they did receive a call about her, they knew to treat it differently. So this is all going to be part of our program here. Of course, we can't identify everybody. But as they start to responding to these calls and getting to do the work, they will start identifying people that are going to be you know, frequent flyers to this program, which is what is really the target audience that we want, so that we are responding to those people without necessarily a law enforcement lens to it, and you know, dealing with the people and giving them the help that they need. And again, I just want to reiterate, the triage is going to be important, and as the teams come into the situation, they know to back out if in fact there's any you know, indication that this person is going to be violent, any indication that there's a weapon on the scene, they know to back out and revert back to a more traditional law enforcement response or respond to the situation together. So we are going to have police monitoring this, especially for the first, you know, 60 to 90 days, just making sure that everything's okay.
Right.
And we're going to, you know, we'll have a lot more data 6 to 9 months from now to expand the program. Eventually it'll go citywide, but we're a little bit away from that.
I have a few folks who have messaged me through Facebook. From Margaret, first of all, it says, this is so wonderful to hear. Proactive mental health management is so very necessary. I love this. And they ask if this is also something, is this team also implemented for domestic violence situations?
That, I don't believe domestic violence is part of it because, you know, domestic violence, you know, under Illinois state law, if there is any physical altercation on either side, either partner, then right now it's mandatory that the police take someone into custody. So I don't believe on the domestic violence we are at that point just yet.
Okay. And obviously a lot of us would appreciate that, and including our men and women in uniform, who they're often in danger because those are some of the most violent and volatile situations.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
By the way, folks are complimenting me on Facebook for my hat, which I wore just for you. I'm wearing my Marshall's hat that you gave me. He used to give me a hard time for not wearing it. I go ahead and wear it, and you don't even show up in studio, my friend.
Next time. No, I promise. Next time.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate you giving us this update. I think I speak for a lot of people when I say that I'm grateful that the city of Chicago is going in this direction. I know that there were folks in our city hall that were very adamant that we move in this direction and the energy that they had behind it. And it sounds as though you really are putting a thoughtful and meaningful new teams into place in ways that I think will change the direction of our relationship with law enforcement. And I'm grateful for that.
Yes, and one more great thing about the program, Patty. These are like Ford Sprinter vans that the team will be in. Right now, they're just plain white. We are having a contest. I believe it's with Chicago Public Schools. They're going to design
what?
Help from the community. They're going to design the wrap of the van.
Okay.
And the people out there in soft clothing. No one's in law enforcement type clothing. They're in soft clothing that shows labeled with polo shirts. And then as we get to the winter, just soft jackets that identify them as the care team, just to kind of, that optic illusion that they're here to help, which is what we want. We want the optics to look what they are. They're a care team. So we're really excited about the program. Frees up police force resources where they're needed the most. And more importantly, it's giving the people who need the help. Directing them to the resources directly.
Do you have any information on maybe, the schools that are participating in this contest to have the design for the wrap? Is it just an every?
You know what? I don't.
It's okay.
I'm not sure. I just know that they're having, the community relations and public schools will be involved in designing the, like a wrap for the van.
Right.
So
that's a great idea. I love that.
Yeah. So, yes, absolutely. So, we had a lot of community feedback on this. And again, I just want to reiterate that why just the 19th and 6th District? Well, historically, that's where the largest volumes of these calls come from. So we have to start there. It makes the most sense to go where they're going to get the most, calls and the most opportunity to intervene in these situations. So hopefully, and the program is a success, and we'll start expanding it citywide as we go down the road.
Outstanding. I look forward to seeing how things go, and I appreciate your time. Again, we've been talking to Deputy Mayor of Chicago, John O'Malley. He's Deputy Mayor of Public Safety, and we'll be checking in with him regularly to see what's going on in the city, what we need to know, and every once in a while tell us how we can get involved. All right, John?
Absolutely. I appreciate it.
Actually, am I supposed to call you Deputy Mayor? Is that like the, because you're appointed, so you're not... Right? So I don't have to call you Deputy Mayor.
Just
O'Malley? All right.
O'Malley.
All right, O'Malley. Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
All right, kiddo. See you later.
All right. Best of luck to you on everything, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
Okay. Take care.
Take care. We are going to take a break here. A word from the station, and we'll come back and head into the home stretch. And I got to find out what's coming on. Lady B, is Rick Unger still on after me? Thumbs up or I don't know. Do you know? Yes, Rick Unger will be on after our show today. So to stay tuned for that. More in a moment on Driving It Home with Patty Vasquez. That's me.
The WCPT 820 Club is here.
How do you join, you ask?
It's easy. All you have to do is head over to WCPT820.com to register.
Be the first to know of WCPT events and contests.
Once you're registered, you can take part in caption contests, polls, trivia, surveys, and games.
Go to WCPT820.com, look for the WCPT 820 Club tab in the menu, and follow the instructions from there.
Contests running on WCPT 820 are open to Chicagoland residents 18 and over. Complete rules at WCPT820.com.
You're listening to Driving It Home with Patty Vasquez on WCPT 820.
We are winding down here. Just a few minutes left on Driving It Home. And I do want to address something on social media. The folks on our Facebook page are saying there was no volume a while ago. I have to say, it is Labor Day. And Lady B has been, I don't want to pull back the curtain on anybody, but I don't want to call anybody out. But Lady B has had to have everything go running all by her lonesome. And she's doing an amazing job. And sometimes maybe a host like me comes in and pushes the wrong button. And then everything gets thrown off. And the next thing you know, there's no volume. We don't know really what happened, but we'll put it there. So thank you for hanging in there through this whole show. And I'm always so happy to be here. I really enjoy getting the opportunity to hang out with you, have great conversations, see how you're doing. I have to tell you, I had such a wonderful weekend. It was my son's 18th birthday recently, and he wanted to have some of his friends over, and it was great to see them hanging out together in our backyard, enjoying conversation. And they're in their senior year of high school, and it's hard to imagine that I've only got a year left with him as my oldest son at home. I try not to weep. He's being very accommodating when I give him that look, and he can tell that I'm looking at him like, this is one of the last times you'll hang out and watch movies with us with your old mom and dad. So, you know, we have that fantasy that, you know, maybe we'll make a basement apartment for him or something, but he might not want to come live with us. As it is, I'm already in a multi-generational house. I live with my mom. She has an apartment on the first floor. She actually owns a building. We live upstairs, and it's worked out really well. So who's to say that, you know, Griffin wouldn't want to have a garden apartment? But I don't know. It's also a great therapy room. My younger son, Declan, who I mentioned earlier in our conversation with Deputy Mayor John O'Malley, my son, Declan, I don't know if I've talked very much about him while I've been on the air here. My son, Declan, was born medically fragile, and he was not breathing when he was born and was not expected to survive. And the specialists, the nurses at Resurrection Hospital worked so hard to make sure that this little baby would not only survive but thrive. He is now 16 years old, and he has a lot of challenges. Turns out he was born without a piece of his brain right down the midline. It's called the corpus callosum. You have these fibers that connect the left side with the right side of your brain, and those fibers make communication between the hemispheres possible, and it really is crucial to your overall development globally, meaning that your ability to move your fingers and pick something up with your little pincher fingers, or to write, or to walk, your, you know, gross motor skills, your ability to talk and understand language, those are all impacted if the corpus callosum does not grow the way it's supposed to. And for Declan, it's in the frontal lobe. It's where your higher thinking is, your executive decision-making abilities and processing. For Declan, it actually disrupts everything along the way, and he, along with that, has low muscle tone and severe scoliosis. And he is such an incredible joy. He has made my world a bigger place. I was reading an article about how ABA therapy isn't for everyone, and there are folks that want it to be terminated as an option for therapy services. And I understand that. They're talking about how, you know, not every autist, you don't have to cure somebody with autism. They absorb the world differently. And I agree with that as far as the way Declan, you know, I whenever someone says what's wrong with him, I always say, well, I mean, he's missing part of his brain, I guess, if we're going to be specific. And then I say, how about yourself? Because don't ask a mom who's out enjoying her day with her son, with her child, with her family, what's wrong with him, because I will tell you what's wrong with you right away. Anyway, I got fired up there for a minute, lady, because Lady B's been there. You know what you say to a parent that has a child who maybe you're like curious about what's going on in their life? You know what, you know, if the first thing you think is what's wrong with them, and I'm sure people do, throw that one away. Just let it go. Don't say that. Take a moment, take a breath. If you want to talk to a parent like me and Lady B, say, your child is beautiful. What's their name? That's all you got to say. Have a lovely rest of your day. We'll be back. I might be back tomorrow. I don't know.